Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
World Service members, Monday only listeners, you're all very welcome to your Second Captain's mini pod with Owen, Murph.
Hey Owen, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Ken.
Owen, how are you?
And you just know there must be some serious hardcore boxing chat on the way when you hear this next voice in the pod. Hi Mark.
Hey Owen, thanks for dusting me off.
Oh, it's a Randy Turpin career introspective, is it?
Yeah, what's gone wrong? What's happened?
Who pulled out? Thinking,
Murph, in fairness, Mark's doing very well to hold his microphone in place there while wearing those big Jake LaMotta boxing gloves.
But still, he still manages it somehow.
We'll get to Canelo Saunders in a bit. But let's ease ourselves in with a slightly lower octane sporting event, albeit one that had its own dramatic ending. As Rory McIlroy won the Wells Fargo Championship, it was his first win in a year and a half. Now, standing on the 18th tee, this is late last night, he held a two-shot lead. So just a nice straightforward, I mean, he could bogey, he could par, all fine, and he would have won the tournament. He just a nice straightforward drive anywhere in the fairway.
He's taken a 5-wood on, so I mean he's just going to take all of the trouble out of the equation altogether, just ease it up the fairway,
just bang it up there, Rory. But whatever you do, don't hit it left. Remember, don't hit it left.
It's going to be left, fortunately.
On the other side.
It should stay up. It's long.
Oh, it hasn't. Terrible kick.
Well, it's meant to side of 45 degrees, so my goodness.
Unbelievable. Oh. With a two-shot lead, the only thing you can't do is miss it left.
Oh, dear. We've just gone from a nice, handy two-shot victory, and, you know, maybe it's time to turn over to Match of the Day 2 into these deep, deep questions about Rory's mentality. What would it do to him to throw this away from here? Could he ever recover? There's also a lot of confusion, Murph, whether or not the ball was in a creek on the left-hand side, which is what the commentators were getting on there. I mean, it wasn't, but it may as well have been because it was buried in there right beside it. So it was this bizarre situation where he felt he was unable to execute even the most basic chip back onto the fairway. Then he starts walking the opposite direction with his caddy towards the supporters. And I was thinking, oh no, this... I mean, Jean Van de Velde is a name that pops into mind anytime any golfer starts looking like they're overanalyzing what they're about to do and what kind of crazy thing they're going to come up with. But I think essentially he was considering playing it the opposite way altogether. He thought that he might be able to literally turn around and play further away from the fairway, but into a slightly better lie from where he could then hit his next shot. And even that looked too risky. So it was high tension to watch.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this on the back of Rory just looking absolutely bulletproof for basically most of Sunday. He had played just pristine golf, like really, really steady, secure golf. Then he stands on the 18th tee, does that. And then it's like a 4-minute conversation, 5-minute conversation with his caddy. Mm-hmm. And in the end, actually, you have to give his caddy quite a bit of credit because he, in the end, said, just take the drop. The ball will roll twice, then you get to place the ball wherever you like.
Yeah, it'll be a penalty, and like obviously for a penalty drop, so it'll be your third shot you'll be taking, but it's better than hacking this thing into possibly into the creek and then taking your fifth shot.
Oh man. To be fair, like his third shot, the shot after the drop, was the exact shot he needed to hit at that time, and the two putts were rolled in with the minimum of fuss. But like watching it, I was just sitting here, obviously thinking about thinking about podcasting as always. On it's like, if Rory wins this, it's pretty interesting because he hasn't won in 18 months since January of 2019. If Rory loses from this spot, oh man, to be standing on the final tee, two shots up, and you know, like the leaderboard is not chock full of, you know, the world's top golfers, and to lose the two shot lead and then go ahead maybe and lose a playoff, I mean, it would have been absolutely and utterly devastating.
To a player already in the clubhouse as well, so he knew it wasn't as though he had to worry about the guy who's playing with making a birdie, but it was more that there was somebody already in the clubhouse two shots behind. Anyway, he got there, but it was one of it ended up having all the major McIlroy themes, you know, his ability to grind out a win under pressure. Can he do that? You mentioned the caddy, that there's been some question marks over the years about whether or not Rory listens to the advice of the caddy and whether or not that advice is quite
because it's
forceful,
his mate,
as
you know, Harry Diamond
be.
Like it's a mate of his dating from, like, he's from Northern Ireland, like from his childhood, so there, you know, it's not a guy with a huge back catalogue of victories as a caddy.
They made the point at one point during the commentary that the last time he went through a similar drought, that once he won his first tournament, he more than kicked on a little bit. I can't quite remember what happened.
Yeah, so he hadn't won for 18 months until winning the BMW at Wentworth in 2014. And then that summer, he won three more events, the British Open, the USPGA, and a WGC, a World Golf Championship event. So yeah, and like those three wins, the British Open, WGC, USPGA, were all in a row in July and August of that year. So yeah, but I mean, that's it. Like he is a very streaky player.
He could easily do that again.
Interesting to see that he's been installed as the favorite for the USPGA next week on the back of this. You know, we've obviously been talking about him quite a bit this year, and what the hell has happened to Rory McIlroy? Will he ever win again? He wins once, and there's nothing to say that he might not win three or four more events between now and the end of the season.
There's a big point to make here as well, and that is that there was a full crowd there at Quail Hollow to cheer McIlroy on, which he seems to thrive on anyway. Here he is after the win.
It's felt like a long time since that victory in China back in 2019. You know, the world is a completely different place than it used to be. Everyone getting through a pandemic. Life's changed a lot for me, being a dad, winning on Mother's Day, thinking of Erica, thinking of my mum back home. It just feels awesome. Look, this is one of my favourite places in the world, and to break the drought and to win here again, it's awesome. You know, when we came back from the pandemic, I thought I'd enjoy the peace and quiet a little bit, and I soon realised that to bring the best out of myself, I need this.
Probably should have warned you in advance of that clip. Mother's Day is a different date in America. This catches me every time. But Mother's Day is...
We've major already had, panic.
Yeah, we've already had Mother's Day. I was thinking, didn't I get her something a couple of months ago? No, you've got 10 months to get yourself sorted for next year, so don't worry about that. But McIlroy was a little emotional, I think clearly spurred on by performing in front of a crowd, as was Canelo Alvarez on Saturday night. A slightly more raucous 73,126 of them packed into the AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, to watch him fight Billy Joe Saunders in a super middleweight world title unification bout. That's a record indoor crowd for a boxing event in the US. And unbelievable. It's just, it's surreal to watch that many people packed into a stadium so close to all the behind closed doors events that we've seen over the last year and a bit. But Alvarez was more than happy to whip them up into a frenzy after he landed an uppercut in the eighth round, which pretty much did all the damage.
68-66, Canelo. He's only two rounds up. Saunders took an awkward step back, and now he's holding on.
You see Canelo landing big shots, and he's here.
And look, the right eye of Saunders is swelling up. Canelo rallying his troops here at AT&T Stadium. And this is what Canelo does to opponents. He breaks down opponents and makes them weary of the shots that are coming their way. He's like a matador. Well, that's the power from Canelo. Billy says he's okay, but this is a bad moment for him in this fight.
Yeah, you may well have seen this, if not at the time, since it happened. Saunders made it through to the end of the round, but did not come out for the ninth. Pretty insane ending there, Mark, and I think you got a sense from that clip of just how involved the crowd were. I think Canelo was getting them involved as well. He was loving it.
Oh, it was incredible, Owen. Like, the footage you heard there, it was terrifying and brutal and incredibly skillful all in one, because basically Canelo caught Billy Joe Saunders with a really unbelievably vicious uppercut. And the fight was quite competitive up until that point. I thought Canelo was leading. But, you know, you could tell straight away it was an incredibly powerful punch. And then rather than, you know, what you always see in these situations is the fighter who's on top try and hunt down the opponent, you know, and finish him off while they're kind of have that advantage to push it home. But Canelo knew straight away the sort of damage that he'd done and he stepped off. It was incredible watching it. So it was actually what made it terrifying was that you saw Billy Joe Saunders back off. You saw damage immediately appear on his face. And then you just saw Canelo for the first time in the fight, put his hands up in the air and get this 70,000 crowd pumped up and getting them cheering and shouting. And it was real sort of gladiator stuff, you know, in a kind of a bad way. It was, you know, it was almost, I was watching it at you know, 4:30 in the morning on Sunday morning, Saturday night. And it was this kind of thing where I was transfixed by it, but also thinking, oh no, this is dark.
Yeah, it's like a lot of the chats we've had about boxing in recent years. It's you're watching, should I be watching this? I mean, I am watching it, so therefore that answers the question, I suppose. But and you can't help but be sort of exhilarated by it at the same time as being somewhat horrified.
And it's kind of funny because it's also the big point that's come out of this fight afterwards, and I think why you've decided to get me on today, Owen, is to kind of the conversations that came up afterwards are really interesting, because the extent of the injury that Billy Joe Saunders suffered was actually incredible. I'll come to it in a second, but Saunders, he didn't throw one punch back, and there was a minute and a half left in the round. He obviously, it seemed like he'd suffered some sort of horrific injury. But then when the fight was stopped and Billy Joe Saunders wasn't able to come out for the next round, it was this kind of strange commentary that happens constantly in boxing. And it's something that I think is really problematic, where the commentators on DAZN, it's, you know, everyone in the English speaking world was listening to this commentary. And it was the sense that this guy who has turned out to have a quadruped fracture of the orbital bone, so like a complete blowout of his cheekbone around the eye socket, that he was some sort of quitter because he didn't come out for the next round.
He didn't go, like, I mean, it was the most cliched quote around when something like this happens. He didn't go out on his shield, said one of the commentators. I should also say Carl Froch was in there, and Froch, maybe partly because he's another British fighter, you know, whatever, but maybe just because he saw a bit of sense. He was trying to make the point that, look, this guy is a fighter and wouldn't just, he doesn't quit, and something's obviously seriously wrong if he's quitting his duel like he has.
Yeah, but there's also, you know, he was saying that to defend Billy Joe Saunders, but there's always this idea that there's irreparable damage done to a fighter's reputation when they don't continue to fight. So,
well, is Billy Joe Saunders not the worst in the world for that?
Yeah, so Billy Joe Saunders, you know, it's funny how these things turn out. So back in November, he was saying that exact same thing about a fighter called Daniel Dubois, who's a heavyweight from the UK, who fought Joe Joyce back in November. And Daniel Dubois is this 23-year-old, really good prospect. And he was fighting, you know, ex-Olympian, super heavyweight, 18.5-stone fighter. And he took a knee because, again, he'd broken his eye socket. And rather than continue to fight against an 18.5-stone monster, he thought the best thing to do at 23 years of age was to probably take a knee and come back to fight another day. But then Carl Frampton at that point came out and gave him loads of criticism in commentary. I remember Kevin Mitchell in The Guardian, who you actually wouldn't expect to kind of take this angle and stuff, said that, you know, he has serious questions about his commitment. But also, you know, predictably, because Billy Joe Saunders is one of the worst people on the planet, he came out and he said that, you know, he would always go out in a shield.
Yeah.
He would die in the ring. This sort of nonsense.
Didn't he give it? Yeah, he gave a full rundown of the injuries that he would fight through.
If my two eye sockets were broken, my jaw was broken, my teeth were out, my nose was smashed, my brain was beaten, I was not stopping until I was knocked out or worse. I don't agree with a man taking the knee and letting the ref count him out.
But Mark, like, I can understand, you know, clowns like me, you know, sitting back here and saying crack like this, you know, as in, like, I would never quit, like, you know.
Yeah, with your can of Pringles.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea that you're a boxer who, you know, has a fair idea at some stage he's going to be fighting Canelo, who is one of, you know, the hardest punchers, like middleweight punchers ever, maybe. I mean, you know, you're going to be getting, like, there's an excellent chance this will happen to you. Why do you offer up a hostage? Why do you, like, shit all over guys who are obviously unbelievably, like, insanely brave people to step into a ring in the first place? And start talking like this. I mean, I can understand why journalists do it, basically, is what I'm saying. I cannot understand why another boxer would impugn the reputation of another boxer by saying he's a coward for taking a knee when his eye sockets exploded.
No, I think so. And it's also, it's this sort of if people want to watch the fight back or watch even just that kind of minute and a half when Canelo lands the punch against Saunders, it's incredible to see it, what happens to a fighter when the orbital bone or the eye socket is damaged, because immediately you'll see a dent under his eye. Like, I'm talking within 5 seconds, there's a dent under his eye and bruising, and you can see there's an indentation and the kind of the shape of the eye changes. So it's not just a case of saying, you know, there's a bit of eye swelling or, you know, you can't, even that you can't see out of the eye. It's that there's a break quite clearly and there's something, you know, there's a real damage being done. And this kind of question goes back, I think, most clearly in our own heads. You might remember that, you know, Kell Brook, when he fought Golovkin in 2016.
Yeah, I was watching that one.
Yeah, and Golovkin was, you know, obviously middleweight. He's absolutely huge puncher, very big man. Kell Brook came up kind of from light welter and welter to fight him, a fight that should never have taken place anyway. But Kell Brook got his right eye socket broken in the second round. And then he continued fighting until the fifth round. And then this footage, you might remember the footage of Dominic Ingallone. He's the coach. He was waving his towel. And do you remember he couldn't get the referee's attention for about like 20 seconds. And he's walking further and further into the middle of the ring, you know, waving the towel. And so he pulled Kell Brook out. And Dominic Ingle got attacked afterwards by, you know, verbally attacked by the people, you know, who are watching the fight and online, just saying, how could he do that to Kell Brook, you know?
And Kell Brook himself, that was the slight difference from the Saunders one, in that Kell Brook himself was fuming that he didn't get a chance to go out on his shield. To use
totally. But then just to finish up on this point, what happened then was Kell Brook was severely injured, obviously had to get surgery. Then he came back the next year and then his left eye socket was broken. Errol Spence broke his left eye socket because there was obviously some, you know, huge amount of damage there and he's becoming more susceptible to it. So he needed surgery again. And then in his last fight, he fought Terence Crawford and he got stopped really early, but he was pawing away at his eyes and his cheekbones throughout the whole fight. It was horrific. So this is the type of macho nonsense from fighters and, you know, fight fans who suggest that either you go out in your shield and there's no other way forward for you then after that. It's really silly. So as much as I have to say, and I mentioned it on Twitter, that I'm the opposite of any kind of fan of Billy Joe Saunders. I think he's actually a reprehensible person. And, you know, also the fact that he beat Andy doesn't help either. But, you know, aside from that, he's really awful. So, you know, I wouldn't be quick to defend him. But this situation, yeah, I thought it was quite dark and something that absolutely has to change in boxing.
Daniel Dubois, you mentioned there, is probably the one who comes out of this with most class. I saw the one who Saunders was slagging off a while back, he tweeted saying, "You fought well, Billy Joe Saunders. Hope your eye heals up quickly and you can come back stronger, champ." So, you know, some people are keeping their class in amongst all the stuff that's going on there. Our World Service members listening to this episode will know we had another really fun week last week. A lot of people enjoyed the chat we had on Friday with Jack Conan about his inclusion in the Lions squad. Was he a bundle of nerves watching the announcement live on television? Did he receive an immediate flood of congratulatory phone calls from his nearest and dearest? Not exactly.
I didn't think I was going, like, so I was like, I won't bother watching it. Like, I just had it playing on my phone, like, just driving up to UCD, and I had it just on the car kit, whatever. And then, you know, the tight burn and whatever. And I wasn't really thinking that if I was going, I'd be next up. I was just, you know, listening to it. And I called out my name. Jeez, I nearly had a stroke. Like, I didn't know what was happening. And then I thought, is there like a Jack Cronin, or is there someone else? Did I hear that right? Or is there someone else with a really similar name to me? And then I was in absolute shock. I rang my old lad and I was like, Daddy, are you watching it? Are you watching? He goes, "Am I watching what?" I was like, "Hey, do you have the news on or whatever?" He goes, "Oh, I have the radio on in the background." And he was like, "The radio?" I was like, no, I'm off to get picked. He had an excuse on, like, so.
I just love that. His AO lad. I have the radio on.
What's happened?
I know. How great was Jack Conan, by the way?
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, it always happens. I feel more invested in a sports person after an interview like that.
Yeah.
And so I was sad to see Conan go off during Leinster's win against Connacht. He's got to go through his HIA protocols. Hopefully he'll be okay and he'll be able to take his place with the Lions. But that interview is available for you right now if you sign up to the World Service. In fact, you have access to all the World Service interviews we've ever done if you become a member, not to mention all the great stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks with brand new episodes of Richie's Player's Chair, Ken's Political Podcast, A Game That Changed My Life Tomorrow with 3-time world champion Marcus O'Sullivan, all that and way more for €5 a month plus VAT, and it's all waiting for you. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Owen.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you,
Ken.
Ken.
And thank you, Ken. Thank you, Murph. Oh,
I'm going to attack myself. Oh, no.
Mark.
Before we go and I don't get back in till 2022, yeah. Can I just thank everyone who voted for Where is George Gibney last week?
did we win?
We don't know for sure because they closed the voting with 24 hours to go.
So when do we find out?
We find out next week.
I want a Webby.
Yeah, so we were at 18% of the vote and we were in third place before you put the shout out. And then I checked it just on the day before they closed the vote and we were at 42% of the vote.
On the mud
and, with a tasty 20% lead. So it's looking quite good. So thank you, everybody.
I like the sound. We've got a football podcast, a Monday Football Pod, already waiting for you. So you can have a listen to that one there. That one is available to everybody. Thanks for listening.
Better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no damn LeVar.
Yes, they are.
Owen McDevitt from Ireland's Second Captain Show.
Owen McDevitt, you a cold piece of work.
You're looking good. I know you're feeling good.
Owen, you're amazing.
I'm like, yeah.
2,000 podcast recordings today and the Second Captain Show in Ireland. Owen McDevitt.
Owen, I like you and I like your style.
Yeah. I hear you in your 40s and you're bald-headed. Let's just put it this way. You ahead of the game. Owen McDevitt.
Hey, Jack Charlton, we're just about out of time. Been a pleasure talking to you.
I can't believe it, dog. I know what 2000 is. And that's a heck of a feat. But any man, I love your style.
It's delicious.
I'm Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt.
He's a non-event as far as I'm concerned.
You're bald-headed.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The Second Captain's World Service.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.